Chapter 10. Unleashed. Inconceivable. Unthinkable. Harriman knew this place. He had never before set foot on Committee Sona. Its name was unknown to him, as was its very existence. And yet he knew it as soon as he emerged from the porta rubrum Hathor Mart had opened through the blazing siren seer. An inhuman jail, ether hostile and cold, a place unknown to him, but awash with pain and guilt, and a singular hatred.
"Yes," he said, "this is where they would take Callimachus."
Harriman tasted the blood coating his armour, the sum of a life wasted, filling him in an instant. Ludek Prynne. A mortal whose soul fire could never be entirely hidden from those with eyes to see it, not even by a hateful place like this. What might a mind like his have achieved with the proper tutelage? What glories could he have known? No one would ever know. His potential wasted by an Imperium that feared and persecuted that which it did not understand. Harriman grieved for Prynne's lost potential, even as he felt the man's soul torn apart by the great ocean's predators. Then Prynne was gone, and the furious battle raging around Harriman surged into his awareness. Gunshots and screams, fire and madness, warp phantoms scratched at the wards vouchsafing his autosenses, crackling through his visor with gibbering voices and static. Everywhere Harriman looked, he saw the madness of unchecked ether powers, the inmates like lunatic children let loose in an armory. Shimmering bodies hung suspended in the air, incandescent with fire as their powers consumed them. Flaming skulls flew with lasbolts and lightning blazing from underslung weapons. Tar-black smoke coiled obscenely, and storms of lightning forked from the outstretched hands of mass murderers. A mirror-faced man knelt in a pool of his own glistening viscera, as a hurricane of dust pulled him apart organ by organ, limb by limb. Then Harriman nodded.
"I saw this place in the ruins of the Pyramid of Fotep," he said,
one hand on the Book of Magnus. Scarab Occult marched from the red mist, pole arms lowered, blades leaping with white flame. Their leader, Honoris Hex, known as the Skybearer, gave Harriman a caustic stare.
"This is where we will find a shard of the Crimson King?"
"The Primarch has led us here."
"How do we find it?"
demanded Hex, turning to unleash a blazing spear of fire from his polearm. It incinerated a pack of inmates with bodies twisted into scaled, ape-like monsters.
"I do not know for certain, but finding Mahavastu Callimachus will be a good start."
Hex gave him another of the withering looks that had given rise to a moniker only ever whispered behind his back.
"The Primarch's scribe, he is here?"
"I believe so." "You believe so? That's what you brought us here with." "We are here because Magnus's soul wants to be whole again," said Harriman,
as more of the Thousand Suns passed through the Porta Rubrum. The feathered ones of Nycteus, the sun scarabs of Caillou, and the Ankh-Haru blades of Memunim. Bolters immediately locked into fire sectors, and disciplined volleys cleared the immediate space around the Thousand Suns. Menkaura came through with Sanact and Lucius. The Emperor's children swordsman had kept himself in seclusion for most of the voyage, but his aura was profoundly altered, resplendent and, if such a thing were possible, more arrogant than before. He and Sanact flanked the tattoo-cut form of Aphogomon, and the bound demon's aura shimmered in delight.
"Such wonders worked before us," it said.
Real space groaned at the seams as the great ocean made sport of the malleable flesh within.
"This place is going to tear itself apart," said Mamunim,
his cult warriors forming a sacred mandala around him. More volleys of bolter fire kept maddened inmates at bay.
"Let it," said Caillou. "You all felt what this place was, what our enemies did here. The sooner it is in ruins, the better." "We find what we came for and kill everything else," said Mamunim. "Harriman?"
Harriman pressed a hand to the Book of Magnus. Its power was unimaginable, each precise scratch of ink on its pages significant and potent. The soul shard was here. He could feel his father's presence like a hesitant ghost, a fleetingly glimpsed impression scratching at the corner of the eye.
"Where are you?" he whispered. "Show me."
The power in the book needed no other invitation. Ahriman's awareness exploded through the structure of Committee Sona. He felt every hurt, every wrong, every humiliation and every pain. He felt old souls and new, the blind, the mad, souls unknown and souls he knew. Ahriman's gaze snapped to an upper gallery, where three figures, a man and two women, were climbing out of the chaos. They bore the mark of Prospero, a boon all travellers to its once fair shores took away with them. The man leading looked back, and recognition hit Ahriman like a blow.
Lemuel.
Two giants were adrift in the void. Like the first spacewalkers, they moved with jellied grace, but these were no soft-bodied mortals encased in life-sustaining suits of absurd fragility. A reaver and a warhound, god engines whose princeps were now indivisible from the machinery within. Insane sentiences from the worst nightmares of the earliest pioneers of thinking machines. Once loyalist war machines of Tempestus, now servants of much darker masters. Hercules Furens and Salgulissa crossed the darkness towards Committee Sona, guided by kine choirs of Raptora aboard the Kemet. In their wake came a makeshift flotilla of pressurized fuel tanks, boxy cargo containers, and anything that could be sealed from the hard vacuum. They arced towards the vast breach torn in the prison's topside, on trajectories mapped by the order of ruin. The warhound, Hercules Furens, landed first, slamming down on buckled deck plates at Committee Sona's midsection. The much heavier Zalgalisa landed moments later, its splay-clawed legs flexing and warhorn growling. The warhound immediately stalked into the depths of the prison without pause, like a hunting beast scenting blood for its more deadly kin. This section had explosively decompressed, but the Pavoni adepts had rendered its atmospheric composition breathable. Not for the Titan's benefit, but the following forces. With the Titans on the hunt, the first of the cargo containers slammed into the breach. They skidded through the spinning morass of debris before magnetic clamps secured them to deck plates and retrofitted support stanchions. Explosive bolts dropped the sealed sides of the containers, and the dregs of the planet of the sorcerers poured out. Packs of slavering beasts herded from the toppled Menhir city and blood-sworn renegades beyond all hope of redemption. The Kemet's lance fire had been precisely calibrated to not interfere with Committee Sona's spin, and thus its artificial gravity was unaffected by the vast opening in its hull. The breach point selected by Ignis was precisely 3.6 kilometres from Ahriman and his cabal, a strike to capture the orbital's embarkation facilities. Or so it appeared.
"Dorsal manoeuvring array, 3-second burst starboard prow array, 70-degree down angle," said Ignis. "Bring us up over the breach. I want those ships bracketed."
Data streams cascaded down the glyph columns, too fast for even the augmented thralls to process. Though crewing a starship was usually a mortal task, Athenaean legionaries on the bridge streamed the information to him at the speed of thought. Ignis spread his consciousness between enumerations to pass each variable instantaneously. Space around the orbital jail burned with warhead detonations and burning atomic vortices. Ghost images of the combatants flickered in the EMAG distortion. Glittering ablation cascades sparkled like diamond dust, and ordnance tracks of frozen exhaust contrails snaked through the void like silver thread. The mathematical beauty of it all made Ignis want to weep.
"Port side battery to fire in 5 seconds," said Ignis. 6 volleys of void shredders, 2 of hull penetrators."
He switched to thought form.
"Tolbeck, prow lance to fire on my mark. Solution Ignis 958.
"What am I firing at?" asked Tolbeck.
"The second ship, the corvette."
"What corvette?"
Ignis sighed. So much easier to work with adepts from the Order of Ruin.
"Quadrant 11, you feeble..."
Ignis felt a jolt of shock as he looked back to the Oculus Bay. Tracking enemy movements within a volatile engagement volume was a discipline all of its own, and his treatises on tactical combat responses and meta-decision-making had never yet failed to exactly predict enemy movements in a void battle. Until now. A series of punishing impacts raked the Kemet from prow to stern. The control obelisks flared with critical damage glyphs, and the Oculus Bay flared as the voids blew out. Servitors and thralls cried as repercussive feedback seared the insides of their skulls black.
"Inconceivable," said Ignis,
admiration warring with disbelief at this enemy's virtuosity. To have blindsided an adept of ruin was a feat of misdirection worthy of the greatest void warriors of the legions. The Kemet had been blind to the corvette's presence, its shields somehow reflecting any detectable emissions inwards and rendering it all but invisible. Only its firing had unmasked it. In the moments he had left, Ignis cast his mind over the gulf of space, seeking to know the mind at the helm of the vessel that had killed them. Thoughts swathed in night, trained to find shadows where none existed. A practitioner of the Artes.
19th Legion, said Ignis,
knowing what must come next. Relentless, unending broadsides unleashed by highly disciplined gun crews. As if on cue, multiple torpedo impacts slammed into the Kemet's ventral armor. Deep penetrating warheads punched into the frigate's guts before detonating in firestorms of atomic light. Disemboweling strikes. Ship killers.
Stop!
Ordered Sister Caesaria, stepping away from the giant gate, one hand pressed to the vox speed in her ear.
Seal the door! Seal it now!
The warhounds growled in anger at this reversal, but halted their efforts to open the gate. They hauled the berthing chains taut in enormous fists. A cold sensation of wrongness travelled Promus's spine at the thought of the gate sealing.
Wait, what are you doing?
Said Nagasena.
We need to get in there immediately.
Caesaria shot him a hostile glare.
Kameti Sona is under attack, she said. Our embarkation decks are swarming with beasts and traitors. The enemy brings battle engines, and these ones are needed to fight them.
Open the gate first, said Promus. Then send them.
There is no time, and my order is final.
The boarding action is a feint,
said Biarki, his eyes frosted with cloud.
The scent of Maleficarum lies within.
What else do you expect within a Sykana jail?
Sneered Caesaria. But Biarki shook his head.
I know the spore of Prospero's Maleficarum, he said,
his voice a low animal growl.
Now open the antscotty door before I make you open it.
Caesaria's fellow sisters bristled at the naked threat in Biarki's words, and the castellan's weapon arms spooled up to fire on the word of their mistress.
You do not command here, wolf, she said.
I hit us not,
agreed Nagasena, with a deep bow of respect to Caesaria.
But nor is he wrong. The prisoners we came for are within. The enemy knows this and seeks to draw us away.
Caesaria considered Nagasena's words and nodded.
Very well, she said. But I can spare no warriors, save for those already within.
Biarki laughed. It was a low, wet growl.
Fear not, he said. We know how to destroy Maleficarum.
Breathless and shocked, Lemuel staggered onto the chamber's upper level. The steps were in the center of this gallery of cells, and 50 dark doorways stretched both left and right. Lemuel sank to his knees as fear gripped his limbs with paralyzing intensity. He put his face in his hands. His heart was hammering too fast and too loud, like gunshots right by his ear. He tried to shut out the awful sounds coming from below, howling nightmare beasts in stolen flesh, the manic laughter of madmen and sickening noise of people being devoured by monsters.
Come on!
Shouted Camille, as strobing firelight reflected from the smooth walls of stone.
Get up!
Why is he here?
Sobbed Lemuel.
What does it mean?
His entire body was shaking. Arzek Ahriman was here. Were they never to know peace from the Thousand Suns? Chaya knelt beside him.
I don't know,
she said, and Lemuel wasn't sure what she was answering, the questions he'd asked or the one he'd thought. She pressed her hand to the back of his neck and gently squeezed. Almost immediately, Lemuel's panic eased, and he took a juddering breath of hot, greasy-tasting air.
"It doesn't mean anything,"
said Camille, standing over him with her hands on her hips.
"It's just coincidence."
Lemuel shook his head.
"There are no coincidences. He taught me that. It was one of his first lessons." "You think he's here for us?" "I don't know, but I don't want to find out." "Then let's get moving."
"Where can we go?"
snapped Lemuel.
"Anywhere but here,"
said Chaya, looking over his shoulder in terror. This time he let her help him to his feet and turned to see what she had seen. Figures in blood-soaked prison smocks were racing up the steps. They paused in their ascent and lifted their heads as if hunting a scent. Lemuel's stomach lurched in horror at their hideously disfigured faces. Ragged flaps of torn-off flesh hung from bloodied skulls, peeled away by clawed fingernails. Blind faces wet with glutinous tears, ruptured sacks of gouged eyes. A word Ahriman had once let slip returned to him. Demon.
"Go!"
he whispered. And they set off down the gallery, all the while knowing there was nowhere to hide. Camille ducked inside a cell towards the end of the gallery. Lemuel and Chaya followed her, skidding to a halt. They were not the cell's only occupants. Hunched in the corner on a filthy mattress were Medea and Ferez. Relief made mother and son go limp at the sight of them, until the natural hostility Committee Sona bred in every inmate hardened Medea's face to granite.
"Get out!"
cried Ferez.
"The monsters will follow you and they'll kill us!"
Lemuel heard the wet animal sounds of the mutilated inmates behind them and shook his head.
"No time,"
he said.
"We've nowhere left to go." "Get out!"
cried the boy, before burying his face in his mother's neck. Lemuel met Medea's gaze, her face a ruin of tears and regret.
"Please don't,"
she said.
"He's all I have. I forgave him."
Lemuel didn't know what she meant, so didn't reply. Camille and Chaya crouched in the corner next to Medea and Ferris. Sounds of the faceless, eyeless creatures pursuing them came from farther back along the corridor, like the grunts of swine with their snouts pressed in loamy earth. Panic filled Lemuel's belly with sour bile, but as he listened to Camille and Chaya speak comforting words to one another, he saw the naked fear in their auras diminish. Lemuel knelt beside them and took both women's hands as fresh memories bubbled to the surface. One of the first lessons Ahriman had taught him concerned the forces inimical to life that dwelled within the great ocean, how they fed, what drew them, and how they hunted.
"They're coming to kill us," said Lemuel, "but if you listen to me, they might not find us."
"How?"
said Chaya.
"They don't have eyes,"
said Lemuel, the words spilling out of him in a rush.
"They don't need them. I think they sense our fear, the dark light in our auras. I think he said it draws them like blood in the water. If we can control that fear, they might not find us."
"I'm sorry to spoil your plan, Lem,"
said Camille,
"but I don't think I'm going to get any less terrified."
"You don't have to,"
said Lemuel, as the sound of bare footsteps slapping on stone approached.
"Remember what I can do. My power. Remember the guard at Tisca's docks? How I made him doubt the Selene's manifest to let us all aboard?"
"Yes," said Chaya.
"I remember. You can do this.
You can keep the monsters away,"
said Medea. He nodded.
"Yes, maybe. I don't know. I'm going to try."
Lemuel took a deep breath. His memories of Ahriman's tutelage were still fragmentary and only slowly reassembling within his mind, but his skill with auras had been with him all his life. All Ahriman had done was provide focus. He pushed his mind into a higher mode of enumerations, and in the blink of an eye, it was like being made whole again, like breaking the surface of a stagnant lake or breathing unpolluted air at the topmost spire of a hive. It felt wondrous, seeing the ebb and flow of emotion through others. Lemuel saw the azure and purple of Camille's brazen courage, a shield against the ochre yellow of her fears and insecurities, interwoven with Chaya's warm umber of maternal instincts that only ever sought to protect those around her. Working against that were Medea and Ferez's auras. the bilious green of old resentment at being forced to bear away a cursed child, black bitterness at the unfairness of a cosmos that cared nothing for the wants of the mortals who dwelled within it. His hands moved over them like a mountebank faith healer at work, drawing courage from Camille and the urge to protect from Chaya. He wove it around them and saw the tension in their faces ease. And with that ease, the fear became more manageable as it drained like water spiraling away into a sluice. Lemuel heard grunting, bovine sounds, and knew the killers were at the door. He slowly turned his head, biting his lip to keep from crying out in revulsion. Two of the eyeless, rip-faced monsters stood in the opening to the cell, hunched over, bloodied teeth chattering and flensed skulls twitching from side to side. Their inmate smocks were stained black, as if something toxic was seeping from within their possessed flesh. They mewled in confusion, like spoiled children denied something sweet. Lemuel held his breath as one of them stepped into the cell. Its mutilated skull swayed from side to side as it drew nearer. Ropes of black saliva drooled from its ravaged mouth. A suckered tongue slid from a lipless mouth. It tasted the air for fear, but found nothing. The creature hissed in frustration and turned its back. Lemuel let out a silent exhalation. Then Ferez began to cry. The monster in the doorway stopped, and Lemuel did the only thing he could to save them. Fire and nightmares lashed the Imperial warriors. Immaterial energies burned in every breath, and corpuscent flared from every scream of a thread cut. Flickering witchfire leapt from madman to madman in the unnatural darkness. Horned silhouettes danced and skeletal shadows clawed out of the walls. Four Voraks were smouldering wreckage. Two fallen Ursaraks lay in pools of an oil-blood mix that stank of mortuary fluids. The inmates of Committee Sona were powerful, yes, but they were untrained, without discipline, without unity. Lambs to the slaughterman's blade. Promus rammed his skull-topped staff into the chest of a man whose eyes were afire. Ribs and spine shattered. Shock trauma pulped internal organs. A psychic pulse destroyed the warp thing within. Its scream blackened the metal of Promus's vambrace, scorching out a protective sigil inscribed by Ptolemy himself in a brighter age. Hundreds of inmates with cindered skin and magma veins pressed them, fighting to escape the tempest-filled chamber as the legionaries fought to enter. They screamed with inhuman bloodlust, vessels for puppeting entities of atavistic hunger and insatiable soul thirst. None of the mortals wore the faces of those Nagasena sought, a stocky man and slender woman with equatorial dark skin, a second woman with soft features and heterochromic eyes. Promus dropped a dozen with headshots, caustic blood sprayed. He went in hard against the others, shoulder low, staff splitting bodies left and right, making space. He flowed into those spaces, killing and making yet more space. He fought 5 steps ahead, as though he had run 1,000 theoreticals of this moment in the sparring cages. The wolves fought alongside him, plunging deeper into the mob of warp-touched prisoners. Biaki was primal fury and elemental savagery, unleashing storms of ice shards, ash-black avatars of ancient wolves and winter lightning that struck wherever his bale eye fell. Svavnir Rekwolf protected his left, hewing limbs with what looked like a harpoon with a long serrated blade. Just looking at the glitter-sheened edges of the null blade made Promus want to snap its haft across his knee. Widdowson fought to Biarki's right, a crackling buckler serving in defence of the rune priest. Har Balagir and Gir Lothnir Hellblind ranged further afield as lone wolves, killing with berserk abandon and hearth songs of the 8 on their lips. Though he was without Psycraft, Yasu Nagasena fought shoulder to shoulder with the legionaries, a dangerous place for most mortals, but the seer hunter's reflexes were swift enough to keep him safe. Behind Nagasena, Vindicatrix directed the lethal predations of the Vorax automata as they slaughtered mortals with distasteful relish. Credence Araxes Ursurax thralls hunted in an opportunistic pack, launching themselves through the air and overwhelming those they fell upon with all the homicidal fury of their deranged master. Promus fell to one knee, unleashing a war cry of the 13th Legion that exploded in a ring of cobalt-blue fire. 20 screaming lunatics burned to fang-mawed ghosts where they stood, but a shrieking witch covered in tattoos of snakes that writhed beneath her branded skin remained standing. She carried sharpened femur daggers, and her arms were bloody to the elbow. Dripping red skulls circled her, ragged stumps of spinal cord dangling from where she had hacked them free. Promus stood, made a quarter turn and fired a headshot. One of her pack skulls intercepted his bolt and exploded in fragments of bone and grey meat. The rest came on like attack dogs. A second bolt took down another before the rest were upon Promus, snapping and tearing with jawbones that morphed into bestial fanged things. They were irritants, nothing more, and thoughts of fire detonated them one by one. Steaming brain matter misted the air as Promus aimed his pistol at the woman again.
"Why did you kill your own kind?" she shrieked.
Pity had briefly touched Promus upon entry to this shadow-haunted chamber of madness, but the sight of fallen sisters' desecrated corpses had hardened him to thoughts of mercy.
"You are not my kind," he said.
"I wasn't talking about me,"
she cackled. Promus fired a custom-load mass reactive, its chemical explosive mixed with noble elements known to be inimical to the warp-touched. The witch's torso disintegrated, but her words cut into his soul. An avian shadow of impenetrable darkness that yet glittered with myriad painful colours billowed from the witch's falling corpse. Its wings were feathered, and it screeched in fury, swelling and growing with every breath. A hooked crocodilian beak formed, a skull garlanded with crushed dreams. A dark lord of the Empyrean. Promus unleashed a torrent of psychic fury from his staff, but the creature drew the fire into its body. It pinned him with eyes that were suns illuminating dead galaxies, a mind weaving plots that would not bear fruit for 10,000 years. It uncoiled a fist of serpentine fingers, and irresistible kind power wrenched Promus's staff from his grip.
"No!"
he cried, as the beast crushed it to splinters. His battle plate smoked as the wards woven into it blistered and burned away. Promus fought to break its gaze, to keep it out of his mind, but its barbed thoughts easily prized open the vault of his skull. It whispered within him, a name and a curse all in one.
"Death to you and all your kin."
It laughed at what it found within him, turning and lifting its head to whisper that secret knowledge onwards. His mind was buckling at the seams when 2 saviors in frost-grey armour appeared at his side. Biaki kicked Promus in the back, breaking the warped thing's gaze. He fell forwards, cracking his skull on the stone floor. Through a haze of blood, he saw Svavnir Rackwolf bend and cast his serrated harpoon like Tashtego of old Earth upon sight of his albino prey. Its long, toothed blade flew true and struck the winged monster square in the chest. It vanished in a screeching explosion of blinding light and sound, utterly undone by Rackwolf's null weapon. Biaki hauled Promus upright, as painful after-images of the monster refused to fade from his retinas.
"I told you we knew how to destroy Maleficarum," he said.
Promus nodded, his mouth tasting of ashes and bile. He blinked away nightmarish visions of corpses of dead worlds, with sores that were once cities, raised by charnel winds that brushed pallid stars and snuffed them out one by one. The unnatural darkness of the chamber lifted, and Promus looked up to its far reaches. Black smoke twisted like a nest of oily serpents lairing in the roof vault. It wreathed the chamber's upper reaches in shadow. But Promus saw figures moving along the upper galleries, transhuman warriors in crimson plate burning with warp light.
"There,"
he gasped, struggling to raise his arm. Biaki looked up and stiffened. a wolf with its hackles raised. The purity of his savage hatred was palpable.
I see you,
he snarled. The sun scarabs went right, leaving Nycteus and the feathered ones to guard the steps from anything that might climb from the bloodshed and chaos below. The scarab occult and Mamunim's Ankaru blades followed Araman left. They moved at speed, clearing every cell and moving down the gallery in overwatching bounds. The Terminators filled each cell with fire as the Raptora sealed them with kind barriers. They left smoking tombs in their wake, billowing the roasted flesh stink of Psyker corpses. Eyeless feasters skulked in the upper gallery, devouring the souls their rudimentary fear sense sniffed out of the morass of raw emotion. They squatted over bodies torn open by bare hands, gleaming entrails hung from dripping jaws. Araman kept his pistol holstered, killing the cannibalistic monsters with sharp jabs of focused kind power, like ice picks to the frontal lobe.
You are certain it was your former pupil? Said Menkaure,
stepping over the caved-in faces of flesh-eaters.
Yes, it was Lemuel, replied Araman. He is close.
And still alive?
Araman nodded.
Surprising,
said Menkaure, staff in one hand, an ornamented pistol with a conical snout in the other. He fired a blue-hot beam of plasma into the chest of a chatter-toothed cannibal. It vanished in a plume of superheated fire, toppling from the gallery, ablaze from head to feet.
Did you teach this Lemuel battle artis? Warding circles?
No.
Very surprising,
said Menkaure, pressing his back to the wall as an explosion of fire boiled from the cell next to him. Araman did not reply, keeping one hand pressed to the Book of Magnus. The tremors of anticipation rippled the pages between its bindings. His own sense of what they would find here was no less dynamic.
You really believe he will be here as well?
Asked Menkaure, nodding towards the book.
Callimachus?
Yes, said Araman. It makes perfect sense the Primarch would maintain a connection between himself and the scribe who penned his greatest work.
Don't you find it even a little strange the Silent Sisterhood have not sensed the soul shard Callimachus might carry within him?
Said Aphorgoman, trailing behind Araman.
I would expect the greatest cunning from my Primarch, said Araman. Even split from himself.
In truth, he had wondered the same thing, though was loath to reveal that doubt to the demon within the yokai.
But you sense more than that, don't you?
Said Aphorgoman.
A sleeping dragon, just waiting on the right song to wake it.
Araman held up a hand as they approached another cell, trepidation caught in his throat.
In here, he said. I go in alone.
Araman spun and entered the cell, staff held before him as a weapon and means of defence. The cell had five occupants, three female, two male. He recognised two of them, Camille Shivani, a psychometrist of no small ability, and Lemuel Gaumon, his former neophyte. The third woman he did not know, but her bone structure told him she was a native of Prospero. But no Mahavastu Callimachus. An older woman in the corner of the cell was weeping, her forearm locked tightly around the neck of a much younger male. A son? Whatever the relationship between them had been was now irrelevant. The boy was dead, strangled by his own mother by the reading of his swiftly diminishing aura. Lemuel sat with his back to one wall of the cell, sobbing uncontrollably, and with his knees drawn up to his chest, a metallic urn clutched guiltily close to his chest. Camille and her Prosperine companion knelt beside the weeping woman, their faces twisted in grief.
What did he do, Chaya?
Screamed Camille, her hands balled to fists.
Thronlem, what did you do?
Lemuel didn't answer, but Araman saw the truth. The clumsy marks of psychic manipulation were evident all across the weeping woman's aura. A lethal mix of old resentment and frustration towards her son, drawn out of the locked place to which it had been consigned before being crudely and massively amplified.
He saved you, said Araman.
The woman would not be parted from her dead son, but the Thousand Sons had no interest in her. They removed Lemuel, Camille, and Chaya from the cell, dragging them onto the gallery.
Callimachus,
said Menkaure.
No,
said Ahriman, unable to conceal his disappointment. But before he could say more, the stabbing pain of a blurted psychic hail crashed into his thoughts. He felt the mind that had sent it, one of geometric configurations and Euclidean precision. The others heard it too, even the demon.
Ignis,
he asked.
Another?
Ignis's voice echoed as if from across a vast chasm, faint and distorted, but its urgency was beyond doubt.
What is it?
Lord Ahriman, there has been a development.
What sort of development?
Said Ahriman, a leaden sensation of dread settling in his gut, a sense of things ended before they had truly begun.
The Kemet is lost, and its few survivors are now aboard Committee Sona. The enemy vessels are turning their guns on this facility, and will destroy it rather than allow us to escape.
Ahriman hoped he had misheard, but knew he had not.
Where are you?
On the breached upper embarkation decks, fighting to secure an alternate means of egress.
What means of egress?
One you will not like. Just rendezvous on our location as soon as you can. I am sending you some assistance,
said Ignis, breaking the connection. But not before Ahriman had a glimpse of somewhere void, dark, and hopeless. A screaming black tomb of lost souls.
Incoming!
Called Nyctias from the top of the steps. Ahriman swore. Could things get any worse? Before he could curse the stupidity of even thinking such a foolish question, he felt the feral touch of icy souls.
Wolves, he said.